Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 3rd of December 2021. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Gannaway. And your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. Headlines this week are Barracks sell-off delayed again, major boost from city redevelopment, and council charges set to increase. So, can we have the first one, please, Daphne?
Yes, and it's Barracks sell-off delayed again. Plans will continue to progress for a major redevelopment of Winchester's Army training camp, despite the date for its disposal being pushed back another 2 years. A proposal is currently being developed for Sir John Moore Barracks to create a mixed-use development, with Winchester City Council eyeing up part of the site for a park and ride. In 2016, the Ministry of Defence, MOD, announced that Sir John Moore Barracks would close in December 2021, but it was given a temporary reprieve in 2019, and the site was due to be vacated on a phased basis between 2022 and 2024. However, last Thursday, it was announced that the date the Army will leave the base has been delayed by another 2 years to 2026. The announcement was made as part of the government's Future Soldier programme, the British Army's most radical transformation in 20 years. Defence Secretary Ben Wallace told MPs that a restructuring and reorganisation of units will take place in the coming years. Last year, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, part of the MOD, published its vision for the site. More recently, calls have been made to protect open space at the base, which local politicians fear is earmarked for housing. Campaigners want to save 25 hectares as a nature reserve that has never been intensively farmed, although used for training recruits. Reacting to the announcement, Winchester's MP Steve Brine said, "Given the complexity of the future soldier plans announced, this is not a surprise and makes sense. There is a part of me, a big part actually, which still hopes we can avert the disposal, but that is extremely unlikely given the reductions in the size of the army as outlined in the strategic review. What this does, however, is give us more time to convince all partners, and especially Winchester City Council, of the merits of our plans for a nature reserve on the northern section of the barracks site." Councillor George Salis, chairman of Littleton and Harestock Parish Council, said, "Littleton and Harestock Parish Council is encouraged by the delay. Following our recent discussions with the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, it is clear that they will need to take time to rework the master plan to incorporate the new local nature reserve. We now need Winchester City Council to do the right thing and officially endorse the proposal, making a commitment to protecting 25 hectares of previously undeveloped green space. Winchester City Council has said that it is continuing to work with the DOI on its master plan." A council spokesperson said, "The council has been advised that the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, is continuing to work with us and other stakeholders to prepare an outline planning application for the redevelopment of the site. We're advised that the Ministry of Defence wish to keep their master plan timetable on track and intend to progress with their next steps in early 2022. A variety of housing has been proposed, including a specialist elderly accommodation along with a neighbourhood centre. Part of the site has also been earmarked for employment and commercial use. Under the government's latest plans, the number of personnel based at Worthy Down will be increased.
Major boost from city redevelopment. A long-running major scheme to improve part of Winchester could provide a nearly £300 million boost if plans come to fruition. On Monday last week, attendees of a Central Winchester Regeneration Open Forum were told that over a 15-year period, once the scheme, also known as Silver Hill, is approved, the local economy and the public purse could benefit from £296 million. Of that, £48 million could boost the public purse. According to project chiefs, between 300 and 400 jobs could be created in a number of sectors, contributing £83 million to the local economy, along with £118 million from increased footfall and £45 million in overnight tourism. Jennifer Newsham, director at Property Advisors JLL, said, "The increased footfall element focuses on day tourism, and we have assumed that we would be able to increase day tourist numbers by 5%, and that will result in an additional spend in the local economy. We believe that through the increased leisure and cultural opportunities as part of the Central Winchester Regeneration Development, it will create a much more attractive place, which will increase the number of people wanting to visit your city." The forum was told that it is assumed that a new hotel would be delivered as part of the development, which would accommodate new guests in Winchester and not displace existing demand from hotels already in the city. It is projected that reduced commuting by creating a live, work and play vibrant city centre experience would provide a £2 million boost. Miss Newsham added, "We expect to keep more resident local, the idea being that you can live and work in Winchester and not commute." As part of the scheme, typical office space will not be built, but instead worker spaces and creative hubs are likely to be created. Patrick Davis, former City Council, asked whether the proposals that are being put forward now will actually deliver jobs that people will be able and want to take. Varian Lyons, head of programme for Central Winchester Regeneration, said, "The jobs that we are looking to create will fill a niche gap, a creative gap. We are looking to bring other opportunities to the site, to attract the creators, the makers, the artists." Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said that it needs to be recognised that the current job projection might not reflect what might happen over the longer term. Concerns were raised by Chris Gillingham about the lack of a bus station in the city. But Councillor Martin Todd said the council were looking on how the train station could be used as a place for connecting bus services. The meeting was told that a procurement process will be held to find a development partner, with a document outlining this going before the scrutiny committee on December the 6th. And that...
Council charges set to increase. Council chiefs have agreed to increase a number of fees and charges to help bolster the authority's budget. Winchester City Council cabinet members approved a 3% rise on some of its services that have to be paid for by the public and businesses in the district. This excludes parking, garden waste and leisure services. A report put before councillors on Tuesday last week detailed that the increase would generate an additional £30,000 of income in 2022-23. One of the areas affected is cemetery fees, with the price of all services being increased by 3%. When the issue went in front of the council's scrutiny committee, concerns were raised about residents outside of the Winchester district being charged more. At Cabinet, Strategic Director Richard Botham said, "That is in reflection to the fact that cemeteries are a parish provision. The city cemeteries are operated as special expense under the town council and paid for outside of council tax." Whilst garden waste services will not see an increase, the charge for new replacement and additional bins will rise by inflation 3.1%. The price to hire some rooms at the Guildhall have reduced, as it is expected that Her Majesty's Courts and Tribunal Service, which is currently occupying much of the building, will exit in the new year. Cost to hire sports pitches, pest control services, and some environmental and licensing services have been increased by 3%. Concerns were also raised about the cost of market stall rents, as they are said to be higher than elsewhere in Hampshire. Mr. Botham said this is due to the provision of gazebos. Market rents have not increased. The council has said that charges for sport and leisure will go before councillors in the new year, and parking charges will be considered in October 2022.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Digby, Wing Commander James Digby, with his family. Elloway, David Elloway, aged 81. Francis, Jill Francis, unexpectedly at home, aged 85. Gillam, Frieda Gillam, after a short illness, aged 96. Harwood, Stephen Harwood, peacefully. Potter, Jane Potter, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 87. Shawnee, Rod Shawnee, after a short illness, aged 75. Tugwell, John Tugwell, peacefully, aged 87. And Westwood, Maureen Westwood, at home, also aged 87. And now we'll have Christian comment, please, Daphne.
And Christian comment is headed, "Come, thou long-expected Jesus," and it comes from the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is rector of St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester. The year is 1744. As it begins, Britain is at war with France. The French gather an invasion force of 10,000 at Dunkirk. Britain musters 7,000 troops to repel them. The French aim is to install the Jacobite Charles Stuart as king and turn Britain into a client state. The invasion fleet is scattered by a storm, but the French prepare a second force which will land in Scotland the following year in support of the Jacobite rising. Meanwhile, Britain is in disarray at home. Money from trade, including, shamefully, from the slave trade, is flowing freely to the rich, but orphans are starving in the streets. Gin consumption reaches its all-time high, 2 pints per week of gin per adult in London. And the Church of England in the 1740s is, as one writer said, lax, complacent and conservative. That's with a small c. And right through the middle of this chaos are walking John and Charles Wesley. They are preaching, challenging, telling the truth, for which they got a lot of stones thrown at them. And of course they are singing hymns. Most famously, it was in 1744 that Charles Wesley saw the orphans uncared for. He read that great verse from the book of Haggai. "Yet for a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth, the sea and the dry land. All nations I'll shake, and the desire of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house with glory." And he wrote a famous prayer. "Born your people to deliver, born a child and yet a king, born to reign in us forever, now your gracious kingdom bring. By your own eternal spirit, rule in all our hearts alone. By your all-sufficient merit, raise us to your glorious throne. Amen." And then he decided those lines were singable, so he added more. "Come thou long-expected Jesus, born to set thy people free. From our fears and sins release us. Let us find our rest in thee." At St. Cross, we are using this hymn for our Advent reflections. It looks to Jesus as the one who comes to liberate us from the fears and sins with which we are wrestling. We may not be wrestling with 2 pints of gin per week each. Well, I hope not. Not in most weeks, anyway. The challenges we face in the English Channel are also different, but huge challenges there are, of humanitarian safety, of compassion, and of fair process. And there are other challenges, from COVID-19 to our use of plastics and energy and providing enough affordable housing. Underlying all these, of course, is the state of our own hearts. There are things we find hard to forgive, and things for which we need forgiveness. And all the habits we know we need give up, but in our strength cannot. Wesley prays, "From our fears and sins release us." That is because it is release which Jesus offers to those who follow him. Jesus said, "Do not fear, do not lose heart. Instead, pray, 'Come, Lord, come,' and know that I will come now, today, in your heart, and at the end of time, to bring in my gracious kingdom."
And now we go on to letters to the editor, and the first letter's read by Nick.
Yes, and this one is about Dingham Shop. "Sir, when an established business is forced to close its shop in Winchester because of high rents and anti-enterprise business rates, there is something seriously wrong. High business rates alone have a negative impact. A local business, such as Dingham's, contributes more to the city than providing cooking utensils and accompanying expertise. Dingham's employs staff who will lose their jobs. The company pays rent to Winchester City Council and business rates. The company is a net giver. The council should do its duty and negotiate a solution rather than having another empty shop. I have the impression that civic chiefs are so far removed from the reality of running a small business, they are prepared to lose a viable and popular shop. As for the other businesses to be evicted in King's Walk, the council seems to be feeding on bad vibes. I strongly suggest the council act before it is too late." And that letter is from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
"Farewell to a fine public servant. Sir, how heartening to see local residents showing their appreciation of one of our vital workers. Chronicle, November the 25th. But Postman Ian Ruddle's fan club extended much wider than St. Faith's Road. We always looked forward to his visit and will miss him. I am sure that everyone would agree that his presence in our community brought real benefit to residents, which went way beyond delivering our mail. And, moreover, an even bigger bonus, How nice to have a photo of a spontaneous local event without our local MP, dominant, centre stage, taking advantage of the occasion. In fact, it occurred to me that since some MPs have recently advocated gaining experience that they can usefully bring to their day job as an MP, they could do nothing better than to sign up with Royal Mail. In this way, they could get to know their constituents, who do a wide variety of real jobs first hand. Better, surely, than finding themselves obliged to take overpaid jobs acting as consultants and strategic advisers, which are of no use to anyone except themselves and presumably the company which pays them handsomely. There are other jobs, of course, which might give them similar insights that would be of use in governing the country, but few that would appear to hold any attraction for our MPs. I wonder why. And this letter comes from Andrea Owen, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And this letter is headed The Whole Child. Sir, many young people have concerns about the environment, about climate change, pollution, and conservation of plant and animal species. But how often does their education inspire their understanding of these issues through exploring and investigating the natural world that surrounds them? I am a retired primary school teacher, school head teacher, and walk roughly 40 miles a week. I rarely, if ever, see young children outside their classroom breathing fresh air and exploring the environment they care about so much. In Hampshire, we are blessed with forest and coastline, river valleys, ponds and chalk hills, and hundreds of miles of hedgerows burgeoning with flora and fauna. Children as young as five are imprisoned in their classrooms learning formal English grammar and mathematics, to the virtual exclusion of a broad and balanced rich curriculum which embraces an exploration of the world around them, its geography, history, natural history, and associated creative opportunities. A study of the environment gives children the chance to apply the skills they develop in the classroom. I believe that health and safety and risk assessment, though necessary, have become so ridiculously stringent as to stifle these wonderful opportunities for first-hand experience. Recently, I walked through the magnificent Mark Ash Ancient and Ornamental Woodland in the New Forest, and not a soul did I encounter. Back in the day, when the whole child mattered, and not just tests and statistics, we regularly took groups there to look and listen and investigate, to search for signs of animal life, to explore plant populations, to paint, sketch, write and record texture and colour, feelings and emotions. We also visited coastal locations, pond-dipped, and looked at plant distribution across hedgerows and ditches. We turned the school grounds into a wildlife-friendly area, with judicious planting of trees and shrubs, and the creation of ponds, and still managed to top the league tables. Memories of this diverse approach stay with the children for their lifetime and make them confident and articulate. I am reminded of William Wordsworth. Shades of the prison house begin to close upon the growing boy. Is this what we want for our lovely children? Hampshire has hundreds of dedicated, brilliant teachers who would be invigorated by this approach. And now that COVID rules are being further relaxed, an exciting world is there awaiting them and the children. And that comes from Bob Sprague, Lakewood Road, Chandler's Ford.
And we move on to a letter on solar power. Sir, may I add a few comments to Mr. Anderson's letter last week, Chronicle, November the 11th. Travelling, but not so much lately, around the country by train, I have seen vast solar farms engulfing agricultural land. But apart from producing electricity for only perhaps 8 hours a day in winter, the land seems wasted. Most panels are too close to the ground for animals to graze, especially cattle, and for the same reason, growing crops, or at least harvesting them. Perhaps one day, a planning condition will be mandated that all new houses and offices will have solar panels fitted as standard during construction. The use of renewable wood for power station fuel is at best debatable. Most of this comes from abroad, for example the USA, so straight off there are a few thousand miles of sea transit. Even before this, many tons of CO2 are produced in processing into wood pallets. There is also some thought that power stations using this wood produce a considerable amount of pollution. For many years, old-fashioned sawmills used offcuts and sawdust as fuel. But now, these so-called renewables come from trees cut down purposely, which can be replaced, it's true, but at what time span? 10 years? 20 years? Where does the CO2 go during this period? There has been much publicity lately of using groundwater heating domestically, but apparently a normal-sized residence needs a considerable area of land for it to be effective. In an urban environment, probably not possible, and even more so for a multi-story block. So, we will still have to rely on gas or electricity for basic home comfort. And that is from L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
Lido Memories. Sir, I have read with great interest the why and the why nots of having an open-air swimming pool in North Wall's Recreation Park. It brought to mind the open-air swimming pool in Hyde, the Lido. As a young 16-year-old, as often as I could, I would go and swim there. It was a meeting place. Then, when one got married and had children, one took them and taught them how to swim in the Lido. Generation after generation would go there. It was, in a very small way, but to us, extraordinarily uplifting and joyful. The children loved it, it was healthy, it was in the open air, and it was a meeting place. Now the people have spoken and signed a petition that they would love to have an open-air swimming pool, but it seems nobody is listening. When you think and look at the size and population, there's nowhere for them except indoor swimming. Think of all the rivers that we have. And may I say that I've swum in Water Lane, where I lived for 7 years, and also at Bull Drove, where I swam along with the eels. It was magical. But we're not allowed to swim anywhere in the open rivers. Most certainly, we cannot swim in anywhere or any area that the college owns in the meadows. In the 21st century, we're being told we cannot have an open-air swimming pool, especially not in North Wall's Recreation Park. They will say that rivers are rising, causing flooding, but that can all be addressed by where you situate it, and would have to be addressed anyway. There are other sites that could be looked at. Let's be honest, we need to be catering for generations from birth to death. And what could be healthier and more convivial for families of any generation than coming together and enjoying a picnic in the open air when it's possible? And that letter is from Eileen Berry, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock.
Sir, 2 years ago, when shopping in Winchester, I used to call into the refectory for a light lunch. The surroundings were ideal. You could sit out in the courtyard among the tables and chairs, or in the back garden. If the weather was poor, then there were plenty of tables inside. In winter time, I like to have a light, warm lunch consisting of a baked potato with a side salad plus tomato. In addition, you would have two small ramekins, one with grated cheese and one with prawns. This, with a coffee for £8, was just what I needed. In this way, I could pass a pleasant hour before carrying on with my shopping. 2 years ago, a new chef was appointed. His first action was to remove the ramekins and plonk the cheese and prawns on top. Well, anyone concerned with the preparation of food will tell you presentation is all. It became clear this new chef was intent on reducing washing up. I wrote to complain and received a letter from a man appointed by the cathedral. He was in charge but had no experience in running a food preparation area. Worse still, he let the new chef do as he liked. Fast forward 2 years and I decided to see what the situation was like today. Well, all that was available today was a small range of cakes, pastries and scones. I finished up with a scone and coffee. However, the scone was tasteless. In past times, there was a warm atmosphere in this place, but today it seems cold and cheerless. How long, I ask myself, will it take for people running the cathedral to wake up to the fact that they need a new chef who can offer a better range of food? Why not offer customers two types of soup? Very satisfying on a cold day. In winter, bring back the baked potato with separate dishes. Certainly the present chef has done everything to reduce washing up. I dread to think how low the turnover has fallen, although the rates will have stayed high. How long before the cathedral wakes up to the situation, I wonder? And that comes from Mr. D. O. Wilkins, Rusland Close, Chandler's Ford.
Hugh Lumby writes on Time to Rethink. Sir, it is clear that the public sector needs to have sufficient resources to be able to perform its functions effectively. We have seen this locally with the Winchester City Council planning and enforcement team, where the decision in the last budget to remove 3.5 posts looks increasingly short-sighted. I am all for experts from the private sector being brought in to help, where appropriate, providing expertise and experience which is not efficient for the public sector to cover itself. But for outsourcing to work properly, the public sector needs to have sufficient numbers of people of the right experience within it. For example, with consultants, they need to be able to ask the right questions of the private sector and to be able to interrogate and act correctly on the advice given. Without this, costs are wasted and consultants can run away with projects. In this context, the fact that Jones Lang LaSalle have been paid around £850,000 of council taxpayers' money since 2019 by Winchester City Council on projects in the city must be a cause for concern. In essence, the public sector needs to have the corporate brain to be able to function effectively, both in providing services itself and outsourcing these. My impression is that Hampshire County Council seems to do this well, but I am worried that staff reductions at Winchester City Council make it increasingly difficult for it to provide services itself or to manage outsourced services and consultants properly. The well-publicised problems with planning and enforcement and the need for effective decisions on Central Winchester, including on the dormant station approach site and the negotiations on River Park, mean that an urgent rethink is required. And that's from Hugh Lumby, Meon Valley Division, Hampshire County Council, Upper Meon Valley Ward, Winchester City Council.
Enforcement? Question mark. Sir, Reading the letter from Russell Gordon Smith, under the aptly titled Rambling Letter, Chronicle Number 8, November 18th, I felt compelled to respond. I understand Councillor Gordon Smith oversees planning and enforcement at Winchester City Council, claiming benefit from experienced officers and the successful effort building the planning enforcement team. I wonder what level the planning enforcement team must reach before they do act. My experience is that they do all they can to avoid doing anything, citing seemingly illogical and specious reasons. Our ongoing experience of Winchester City Council planning began in August 2019. Our neighbours erected an overbearing stable on land which they had raised by over 5 feet on our boundary without permission. No action was taken by enforcement. However, the neighbour was encouraged to apply for consent in another location. No mention was made of the extensive engineering works, which has never been applied for. The application was recommended for approval by Winchester City Council, but was turned down by the Planning Committee. The only member to vote in favour of the application was Councillor Gordon Smith. Enforcement was still not served. We were told to wait in case an appeal was lodged. An appeal was lodged and was dismissed. Still nothing. The applicant reapplied and again WCC planners recommended approval. Again it was turned down at committee. None of this makes sense, as this appeal was about a stable in a different location. The existing building would not get approval, whatever the outcome of the applications and appeals. The raising of the land on our boundary by over 5 feet has caused structural damage to our property, and our builder has advised us we should be cautious of flooding into our basement. And still, WCC do nothing. We are now in the process of taking legal action. We see from reading your columns that our experience is not unique. Does our location in the South Downs National Park mean that Councillor Gordon Smith and the department he runs do not care? Or are there simply not enough people of the right calibre to do a proper job? We do demand an answer. And that letter is from Jackie Ware, Hayden Lane, Warnford.
And this letter comes from Karen Barrett, and it's headed Death's Vigil. Sir, I was disappointed not to be able to attend local events which took place last weekend in support of refugees. I'm of German descent myself, and know many others who have non-English roots. This makes the attitude of some members of our mongrel nation even harder to understand. Maybe I listen to too many phone-ins or divide-and-rule ministerial statements, but I've become increasingly alarmed at the nationalist rhetoric whipped up by fake facts about refugees and asylum seekers. Blaming incomers for lack of housing, pressure on health services, schools, etc., may suit a government which fails to make any meaningful investment in its much-touted levelling up politics, but surely recent history shows us where encouraging a fear of foreigners leads. So I would like to thank the Southampton and Winchester Visitors Group, SWVG, who organised last Saturday's vigil at Winchester Cathedral, and all those who braved the weather to remember the men, women and children who tragically died attempting to cross the Channel in search of safety and the prospect of a better life for their families.
I shall certainly hope to join the SWVG for the next event in the city on December the 17th. And that's from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Margaret Grant has city memories. Sir, COVID, politicians and councillors will not close down these memories of Winchester. The bus tea rooms in the Broadway, the smell of the tea urns, the Rexine-covered seats split with horsehair filling showing through. King Alfred conductors, including Blondie with her mittens and rimless glasses, Rex with his immaculate moustache, and Brenda hanging off the rail on the open back bus in all weathers to wind up the next journey number. King Alfred Boys Club with their Christmas Santa deliveries, who made lifelong friendships over the years. Other pub and club communities, beware the Hayes and Wetherall ladies, and many others whose dark teams played with great rivalry and panache. The Lido Pool and Mr. Abraham, now once again in the limelight. The Lido Friday Nights with Mr. Pragnell, where many future stars and romances began. Bull Drove and school swimming lessons. The beautiful glass bottles in the chemist's window. Alan's Sweets. The sugar candy were to die for. The pet shops. One with a Beware the Parrot sign. Another with kittens and other pets in the window to watch. St. Cross Brothers seen in the street wearing their red and black caps and gowns, proud of our heritage and history, along with many local characters. Don't forget our ghosts. Florence Nightingale, who haunts the chapel at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Alice Lyle, who sweeps through the square, to name just a couple. Firework Night Bonfire on the Arbor Elf. And Safety Pow! The rattle of the Chronicle Press in Hammond Passage. Printed to perfection, I might add. Also, banter with friends passing about whose cricket team plated best last week. Last but not least, if King Alfred drops his sword, what reason or warning did your parents give you? Yes or no to a virgin passing by? Or some other person's misdemeanour causing harm to the city off city coffers? Or citizens, watch this space or sword? Maybe I made this extra reason up. And that one's from Margaret Grant, née Ayling, Buriton Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Less or fewer? Sir, in his letter promoting correct English usage in the Chronicle Letters, November the 25th, Graham Trasler said that we use less words to express ourselves. A true pedant would use fewer words. Now, the letter is from Tom Williams, Hairstock Road, Hairstock.
And this next letter comes from Steve Turner of the Winchester Labour Party, and it's headed Responsibility. Sir, new cases of COVID have reached 50,000 per day in the UK, an increase of 10% up on last week. The steep rise in cases in Winchester and surrounding areas is alarming, and government messaging is confusing and complacent. We urge Simon Bryant, Director of Public Health, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Councils, to show leadership and be far more vocal and assertive in highlighting the risks to local people of transmission of the virus. A new variant will be heading here soon. Vaccinations do not prevent transmission, and we don't know how effective they will be, providing immunity to this variant. It shows that the pandemic is not over and we cannot be complacent. Everyone has the responsibility to demonstrate goodwill and care for our fellow citizens by wearing a mask in all public places, shops, cinema, theatre, buses, especially over Christmas. And that's from Steve Turner, Winchester Labour Party, Health and Social Care Campaign Group, Sleepers Hill, Winchester.
Now we go to Hampshire Chronicle comment, please, Nick.
Frustrating delays in Winchester, again. Barton Farm, Silver Hill, Station Approach and the River Park Leisure Centre have all been beset by delays, enough to make one's head spin. And now it transpires that the Ministry of Defence will not vacate Sir John Moore Barracks at Lyttelton until 2026 because of the uncertainties caused by the defence review that will see the army shrink even further. Originally, the military was due to leave by this month, and then it was put back 3 years and now another two. It may not matter in the long run, and our front page news story says plans for the future of the site will carry on despite the postponement. But in reality, the longer time frame and uncertainty does make it harder to draw up sensible long-term plans. It also does little for the widespread perception that Winchester is a difficult place in which to develop. Ironically, this news is included in the same issue as we publish on page 44 an obituary of Jack Thompson, the Director of Planning at the City Council in the 1970s and 80s. Under him, major schemes were seen to fruition, such as the River Park Leisure Centre, Colebrook Street offices and the Brooks Centre.
Jack Thompson was a lovely man. Now we go over to Frieda, please, for first person.
This piece is written by Joanna Lewis and she's headed it, What the City Needs, Not. Well, dear reader, I've only gone on strike this week. It really does feel like the 1980s again. Shoulder pads are back. The single-breasted jacket, as worn by Prince Charles for the last 30 years, is in. Crop tops and high-waisted mum jeans are de rigueur for the under-30s. And Madonna is flashing her bits again. Tempted to relive a bit of fashion excess and always being secretly partial to a slight mullet, I was quick to flaunt a multicoloured short sweater, complete with dog-tooth boxy jacket, ripped jeans, while twirling around an overly long string of pearls. What I got was Sue Pollard in a Duran Duran tribute band. So why, having learnt my lesson this harsh way, have I gone all retro again, now indulging in 3 days of industrial action for the first time ever? Well, my students insisted. That's the truth. The University and College Lecturers Union have called members out in protest against the ongoing Great Pension raid and worsening conditions for junior lecturers faced with zero contract hours, awful pay and exploitative working practices. I'm lucky not to be impacted as a senior academic. I am not even in the union. And I agree the disruption from COVID to young people's learning has been massive. But when students want you to strike to safeguard the future of a robust learning environment, we have to listen. Something is clearly very wrong with higher education and its unending drive to expand numbers and campuses. The problem came home to me by chance. The same day my students in class echoed the student's union, support the strike. One of my oldest friends, a professor of history at Oxford, messaged me to say he had resigned his chair. His reason? The entrenched managerialism within universities. In his valediction, he quoted the late and much admired legal philosopher Professor John Gardner. Just before his death in 2019, he wrote how he hoped that generations coming up behind me would enjoy the same freedoms I enjoyed, with permanent jobs, secure pensions, and a lot less time filling in forms. This lament of the way in which power and resources have shifted from academic learning to management and administration was reinforced later the same day. I met a former university communications manager on the train, who had just gone freelance. He had left as he had been appalled by the way in which academic staff and students were simply numbers and ways of making money, treated with contempt and viewed as cash cow opportunities. This business and managerial drive to expand student numbers, student services, and student accommodation, but not invest in learning and teachers, in other words, to make universities corporate entities, is why I profoundly despair of the plans to shoehorn Southampton University into central Winchester by allowing an extended campus at River Park. The jargon speak used to conceal this mutual asset grabbing is laughable. A multidisciplinary cultural facility and flexible performance space. The excuses not to consider an open-air swimming pool, one of the many possibilities residents would like for this prime location, are equally hilarious. The area is prone to filling with water. In the same breath, there's a green light to allow, in theory, massive new builds for students, which is an environmental asset and a community asset. What can Winchester people expect in return? More high-rise student accommodation for those elite families who can afford to pay sky-high fees. Just what the town needs to attract tourists, not. More temporary residents who buy online. Just what the local economy needs, not.
And did we say who wrote that?
Yes, that was by Joanna Lewis.
I missed it at the beginning, but I thought she deserves to be recognised.
She does.
Bill Garham's alternative look at the news this week has three items, so I'll ask Daphne for the first one, please.
And the first one is headed, It's Quaint Lifestyle. More fuel for the fire of the Winchester property market comes courtesy of the Wall Street Journal, one of America's most prestigious newspapers. It features Winchester in a recent article that is headlined, The British Cathedral City of Winchester is drawing home buyers to its quaint lifestyle. Setting aside the daft US habit of capping up every word of the headline, the feature highlights the unwelcome fact that home prices are 14 times the average salary, the biggest in the UK. The feature starts, For centuries, the pious have been drawn to the historic city of Winchester to worship at the ancient Gothic Winchester Cathedral. More recently, a different breed of pilgrim has been making the 65-mile trip southwest from London. Pre-pandemic, Winchester was considered a beautiful but inconvenient alternative to life in the British capital.
Train services between the two cities take just over an hour. Many Londoners were simply not prepared to spend more than 10 hours a week on a train. Working from home has changed all that, and Winchester has become a property powerhouse. Well, for anyone who's been in Winchester for the last 40 years, the city has always been a property powerhouse, fuelled in large part by London people selling up in the capital where property prices are even higher and buying cheaper in Winchester and commuting back to work in the capital. The feature includes details of several upmarket houses, including Hyde Abbey House on Hyde Street, featured in the Chronicle earlier this year. The 17th century Grade II listed 7-bedroom house is on the market with Knight Frank for £3.4 million. Articles such as this in the Wall Street Journal will only make that trend even stronger, a driving up of property prices for everyone, not just the rich. And that's illustrated by a picture of Hyde Abbey House, a very gracious Georgian mansion fronting the street at Worthy Lane, I think, is it?
Is it Hyde? Oh, I thought perhaps it's Hyde Street, isn't
Hyde
it?
Hyde Street, maybe, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Calendar of Genius. In 2020, with the generous support of Winchester College, Bill Hode produced an A3 calendar, a sum of George Shepherd's Winchester watercolours that are in its archives. For 2022, he has created another, which, due to the scarcity of his Hampshire work, will be the last. It includes many of the most familiar Winchester landmarks, as well as pictures of Andover, Basingstoke and Christchurch from the Sutherland Collection in the Ashmolean Museum. Throughout next year, you will be able to explore daily the work of the forgotten genius who painted Hampshire, as Barry Sherlock described Shepherd in the Hampshire Chronicle recently. And that piece is accompanied by a picture of Bill Hode presenting the new A3 calendar.
Activities at the Science Centre. Winchester Science Centre are holding Christmas-themed shows over the next 2 months. The shows will be taking place from November the 27th on weekends and school holidays until January the 16th. There will be a dinosaur show, a guest appearance from Father Christmas, live planetarium shows and a live science demo. Dino Dig will involve joining the Science Centre's archaeological excavation team on the hunt for buried bones. In the mini fossil festival, families can touch real and replica dinosaur teeth and claws that were fossilised millions of years ago. There'll also be special guests over the festive period, including paleontologists and experts from across the field.
Lighting up times. The lighting up time ends on Friday the 3rd of December 2021 at 7:50 a.m. and begins again at 4:01 p.m. On Thursday the 9th of December it ends at 7:56 a.m. and begins at 3:59 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Continue with items of general news, and we'll go over to Daphne for the first one, please.
And the first item is headed Bus Charity Plans for 2022. A Winchester Transport Heritage charity has announced its events for next year. Friends of King Alfred Buses, FOKAB, has confirmed details of the services it will operate on Bank Holiday Monday, January the 3rd, 2022. Whilst in keeping with the policy of recent years, the main running day will be in the spring on Bank Holiday Monday, May the 2nd, with a smaller operation involving around 6 King Alfred vehicles for January. This will maintain a long-established tradition and provide a service for the many supporters who would still like to travel on these historic buses during the winter. As usual, the bus services will be centred on the Broadway in Winchester, with the first journey leaving at 9:15 a.m. and the last at 4:20 p.m. A particular feature is the planned use, for the first time since major renovation, of King Alfred 1970 Leyland Panther UOU-419H. This vehicle has seen an extensive and costly structural rebuild, followed by repainting in its original livery, including authentic branding, lettering and advertisements. The charity is dedicated to preserving King Alfred buses, coaches and the memory of King Alfred Motor Services, which provided Winchester's local bus services between 1920 and 1973. It has over 30 years' experience of giving nostalgic rides on its fleet of 14 restored heritage buses. FOCAB provides heritage transport for a number of community and charity events. Such journeys are all provided by volunteers at no charge to the users. And there's a splendid photograph accompanying that, which is of a 1959 Leyland Tiber Cub WCG-104.
Really?
Not too sure what that... Yes, anyway. It's a single-decker, green-painted bus with a split screen in front, and it's approaching Sparsholt, and this was on the last running day of January the 1st, 2020, and it's a beautiful photograph.
Here's another rather different bus story. And the title on this one is Mother's Call After Anomaly in Bus Pass Provisions. A mother has called for changes to be made after an anomaly in bus pass networks has meant she could be forced to spend hundreds of pounds more a year to send her son to college. The woman, who does not want to be named, lives in Twyford, and her son started in September at Peter Simmons College. She applied for a bus pass from Stagecoach and put her postcode into its website. She was told that the Winchester Student Rider was applicable, at a cost of £397. On her son's first day at college, he went to catch the bus and was told that the pass was not valid from Twyford. But the responses were mixed throughout the week, with one driver contradicting another. She said, "Finding this bizarre, I contacted Stagecoach. I was advised Twyford is not included in the Winchester network of catchment schools." The woman told the Chronicle that her son was previously given free travel to Westgate, a feeder school for Peter Simmons. The Winchester Student Rider stops at Hockley, which is the golf club. The next level up is the gold ticket zone, which goes as far as Kingston, right the way down to Chichester. The gold ticket zone pass costs £745 a year. There is another pass, the Solent Rider, priced at £545, but that also does not cover Twyford. The woman says that the Winchester Pass is available to those living in Springvale and Kingsworthy, around the same distance from the college. She said, "All I want is for him to go 4 miles down the road." She has been told that it is a commercial decision to not include Twyford in the Winchester Student Rider Pass. She said that Stagecoach promised that they would look into the anomaly next year. "My hope is that they change the boundaries to include Twyford in the Winchester Student Rider," she said. City Councillor Tony Bronk has been in contact with the woman and was also contacted by a Colton Common resident who has had the same problem. A Stagecoach spokesperson said, "The Winchester City ticket boundary has long been established to encompass much of the main city bus network, bounded by Springvale to the east, Three Maids Hill to the north, Pitt to the west, and Hockley M3 Junction to the south. Twyford and Coldon Common fall outside of the Winchester City ticket zone. We are committed to providing customers with the best range of price and ticketing options, including online and mobile. Ticket boundaries have to be set to determine a suitable ticket zone that provides the most cost-effective and attractive travel proposition for our regular customers. The location of the M3 provides a suitable southern boundary.
Mopeds give freedom to young workers. A scheme which helps young people with transport has just been given new electric mopeds, with a Kingsworthy resident benefiting. Wheels to Work helps young people aged 16 to 25 in rural areas of Hampshire by loaning them their own forms of transport. Tom Davis, 19, who works as a greenkeeper at the Royal Winchester Golf Course, uses one of the mopeds to travel to and from Kingsworthy. Tom said, "It has made a huge difference, because before this I had to rely on a lift from my mum at 8 a.m. But having this means I can do much earlier starts and I can be more flexible with my hours. I would definitely recommend this scheme to other young people like me." Tom was also given support for equipment in the form of a free helmet and a jacket and gloves at a generously discounted rate. The County Council's Executive Member for Highways Operations, Councillor Russell Oppenheimer, said, "Providing these electric mopeds as part of the Wheels to Work scheme is a double win for us. Not only are we providing young people in rural areas with a vital and reliable form of transport so they can get to work, training and interviews, but with these new mopeds, we are being more environmentally friendly and helping Hampshire reduce emissions and reach its goal of becoming carbon neutral by 2050. We have plans to purchase more over the coming months." Young people aged 16 to 25 can hire a moped from £20 a week. Those over 25 may also be able to benefit from the scheme in specific circumstances. A total of 5 electric-powered mopeds have been purchased to date, with plans to purchase more in the coming months. And there is a photograph of Councillor Russell Oppenheimer standing outside the Royal Winchester Golf Club with a very smart black and red moped, and Tom Davis, who is the user, standing with the councillor with a really big smile on his face. He's obviously thrilled with this new opportunity.
Call for action on street drinking. The City Council are being asked to do more to prevent begging and street drinking in Winchester amid complaints from visitors to the city. The issue was put to Winchester City Council's cabinet members during a meeting on November the 23rd by former councillor Ian Tate. It follows concerns raised with the meeting being told that complaints had been made about people drinking and begging from those visiting Winchester. Mr. Tate said, "I am in the city centre pretty much every day and regularly see between 3 and 6 people begging along the High Street and around the High Street. I have no issues whatsoever with the individuals themselves, some of whom are real characters and good guys and girls. However, it upsets me tremendously, and of all the things people question me about, street begging and drinking is high on their list. I, like many others, want to do something about this real tragic situation, particularly as we get to the colder months." Mr. Tate applauded the work of organisations in Winchester helping the homeless, including Trinity, Winchester Beacon, formerly Winchester Night Shelter, and Emmaus. He continued, "The BID and the council have their spare change for real change to try to divert people from giving to those begging on the streets to a more organised donation. More than a decade ago, alcohol exclusion zones were launched to prevent antisocial drinking. But Mr. Tate said, after all these excellent efforts, why are we seeing no decrease in the number of people begging on our streets? And even at 9:30 a.m. regularly see people drinking around King's Walk. Does Cabinet feel we will ever resolve the issue of begging and street drinking, which I feel damages the impression visitors get of Winchester, and who just don't know of all the huge and excellent efforts that take place to help disadvantaged people?" Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, responded, "This is a really difficult issue. I think people associate begging with homelessness, but certainly in Winchester there is very little relationship between the two. We currently have very low levels of homelessness in Winchester, and many of those are transient, so they may only be on our streets for a couple of days at a time before we deal with them successfully. Clearly, there are particular issues around King's Walk at the moment, and the neighbourhood wardens, the police, the BID are all working together to look at a solution to that." According to the government's annual rough sleeping count, there were only 7 people sleeping rough in Winchester when figures were released earlier this year. Councillor Angela Clear, Cabinet Member for Communities and Wellbeing, said, "It is a difficult issue, but the council were on the case." She added, "There is a low level of homelessness, but my main concern at the moment is the King's Walk area. Because I won't lie to you, we do get a few complaints from people visiting Winchester. They are not abusive to the public, but I think it's the look. But we are on the case, and I will bring it up again with the right officers."
Police warning after robberies. Police officers investigating a series of robberies and attempted robberies in both Chandler's Ford and Winchester in recent months are asking residents of these areas to remain vigilant. It comes after a woman purporting to be collecting money for charity has been seeking to target elderly residents before attempting to commit a number of robberies. On one occasion, an unknown woman approached a vehicle on Oakmount Road in Chandler's Ford on Tuesday, October the 12th. And suggested that she was collecting money for a number of deaf-related charities. The victim obliged and proceeded to offer a donation, but had unfortunately dropped the money in the car. As the victim picked up the money, the woman reached into the vehicle and reportedly stole a quantity of cash from a wallet before fleeing. There have also been similar reports of a woman acting in a suspicious manner and targeting elderly residents in local car parks while posing as a charity worker in the Winchester area. The woman has been described as white, slim build, approximately 5'4" to 5'6" tall, and has black tied back hair with a centre parting. She has been seen on CCTV wearing glasses with black and clear frames, a distinctive silver-coloured gillet with a hood and pockets on the front, with a long-sleeved top underneath, wearing jeans and black shoes, and is often carrying a black handbag. Officers believe that she may have a European accent and could be of Romanian heritage. That piece is accompanied by a CCTV picture of, I think, the said lady, as described in the article.
novelist on the shortlist for top prize. A Winchester author has been shortlisted as a finalist in prestigious National Book Awards, which this year marks its 50th anniversary. Claire Fuller has been announced as one of the shortlisted authors in the novel category in this year's Costa Book Awards for her book Unsettled Ground. The judges described it as a beautiful, nuanced observation of the richness and pain of marginalised life. Claire gained a degree in sculpture from Winchester School of Art, but went on to have a long career in marketing and didn't start writing until she was 40. She has written three novels: Our Endless Numbered Days, which won the Desmond Elliott Prize, Swimming Lessons, which was shortlisted for the RSL Encore Award, and Bitter Orange. Unsettled Ground, shortlisted for the Women's Prize for Fiction 2021, is a portrait of twins living on the fringes of society. Claire has an MA in Creative and Critical Writing from the University of Winchester and lives in the city with her husband and two children. Jill McDonald, chief executive of Costa Coffee, said, "We are delighted to celebrate these 20 brilliant books as we mark a milestone 50th anniversary year for both Costa Coffee and the Costa Book Awards. My thanks to the judges for putting together such outstanding lists. There's so much here for readers to explore, enjoy, recommend and share. And my congratulations go to all of this year's shortlisted authors." This year's Costa Book Awards attracted 934 entries, an increase of over 30% on 2020, and the highest number of entries received in one year to date. Originally established in 1971, the 2021 awards marks the 50th anniversary year of the accolades. Winners in the five categories will each receive £5,000, and that will be announced on Tuesday, January the 4th, 2022. The overall winner of the 2021 Costa Book of the Year will receive £30,000 and will be announced at a ceremony on Tuesday, February the 1st, 2022.
Fair takes a chalet at market. Hampshire Fair, the county food and drink group, is returning to Winchester Cathedral's Christmas market, taking over a chalet from December the 5th to the 22nd. Hampshire Fair took a chalet at the market for the first time in 2019. It proved a great success, as it allowed smaller producers to have a presence at this Christmas market, which has a national profile. This year, the Hampshire Fair Chalet will continue this format, with a rota of 16 producers, each taking over the chalet on different days. This will include local ales, gins and wines, artisan chocolates, homemade fudge and shortbread, locally roasted coffee, smoked trout and Hampshire charcuterie. Tracy Nash, commercial manager of Hampshire Fair, said, "We are very excited that the Hampshire Hog is returning to Winchester Cathedral's Christmas market. We are confident that many are dreaming of a local Christmas this year, and the Hampshire Fair Chalet is a great opportunity for visitors to buy quality individual gifts and stock up with delicious food and drink that's perfect for celebrations. Here at Hampshire Fair, we are aware of a massive increase in interest in sourcing and supporting local." Owner and chocolatier Trevor Smith of Bewley Chocolate Studio said, "We love the atmospheric location of Winchester Cathedral's Christmas market, and we're looking forward to bringing our own Christmas cheer with our handmade chocolate bars and seasonal favourites such as dipped orange mints, New Forest bark and hot chocolate dippers. The Hampshire Fair team is manning the chalet on December the 6th and 13th, handing out free local produce guides. The chalet will be available from December the 5th to the 22nd, with opening hours from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday to Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Sunday to Wednesday.
Another piece about the Cathedral Fair, and this is about busker plays at Cathedral after earlier dispute. A Winchester busker has been performing, but with the blessing of Winchester Cathedral. Marvin B. Naylor has been playing on the stage at the Cathedral Christmas Market in the Inner Close. He was invited to perform on the stage, which has replaced the ice rink this year, after an incident reported in the Chronicle in the summer. Marvin was playing at the entrance to the close at the square, and he was approached by a churchman who ordered he leave as Marvin was blocking the entrance. He refused and alerted the Chronicle, and the publicity reached the national newspapers. The churchman, a member of staff at the Cathedral, has since privately apologised. Marvin said that the performances were going well, but a downside was that it was harder for people to put money into his guitar case than when he was on the street. And sure enough, there's a photograph of him playing on the stage, and quite clearly, quite a large stage, with his guitar, and probably a little way away from where the crowds are watching him.
Unauthorised work continues. Unauthorised development continues on a field in the southern parishes of Winchester District. Nick Butler moved onto the field on Dradfield Lane, Soberton, in May 2020 and installed gates and hard standing as well as a caravan there without planning permission, as has been previously reported. The moves have upset neighbours, who are also angered by the chronic lack of effective action by Winchester City Council. They want to see an injunction or a stop notice. Most recently, a polytunnel has been erected and other works carried out, including electric lighting and a digger excavating for drains. Neighbours have reported this because he has not waited for the result of a planning application. One neighbour, who asked not to be named, pointed out that development has increased the risk of localised flooding and described the polytunnel as a blot on the landscape with light pollution at night. The City Council is taking some enforcement action over some of the work, but not all of it, which also includes gates, hard standing and drains. On the flooding risk, City Council drainage engineer Darren Lewis said, "The polytunnel has a large impermeable surface, draining to a potentially sodden area. Typically, there is no positive drainage system for this type of basic design. So this will again increase surface water runoff, which will increase peak flows elsewhere, increasing the flooding risk, which isn't permitted. So we'll need to see an FRA, don't know what that is, demonstrating how the proposals don't increase the flood risk elsewhere. This document can also be used for the HCC EA consultations." Mr. Butler has not responded for requests to discuss his activities. The council has said it is monitoring the site. And there is indeed a photograph which does show a really quite messy site. It certainly does not enhance the area.
Hospice Garden goes purple for polio awareness. Members of Winchester Rotary planted crocuses at the new hospice recently to raise awareness of a polio campaign. A group of 10 Rotarians gathered at the new Winchester Hospice to contribute to the landscaping around the building. An area at the front of the building had been set aside for purple crocuses, the symbol of the Purple for Polio campaign, in support of the global Rotary End Polio Now initiative. Last year, Winchester City Council permitted a similar planting around King Alfred's statue. During 2018 to 19, the former president of Rotary, Les Haswell, made the hospice appeal his main charity, and £40,000 was raised. October the 21st was World Polio Day, and for several years Rotarians have planted purple crocuses in public areas as a symbol of the campaign to rid the world of the disease, which mainly affects young children. Two members of Winchester Rotary, Jill Russell and Dr. Cordo Saeed, are both polio survivors. And that's accompanied by a photograph of the Winchester Rotary Group in their orange tabards with Rotary Group of Winchester on the front. They're all holding garden implements, trowels, etc., and a big bag of crocus bulbs. And they're in front of a slightly raised bed, which is all ready for the planting of the purple crocuses.
Plans for more charging points. Plans are in motion for more electric vehicle charging points to be installed across Hampshire. Hampshire County Council has put a contract out to tender for more charging points in a bid to encourage more people to switch to electric vehicles. The four-year contract, which begins in April 2022, is estimated to be worth up to £25 million. Councillor Steve Forster, Executive Member for Commercial Strategy, Estates and Property, said, "The existing Hampshire County Council electric vehicle charging framework already supports more than 80 local authorities and public sector organisations across the southern region to purchase electric charge point infrastructure in a hassle-free, consistent and cost-effective way. This joined-up approach is helping to deliver a much-needed network of charge points ahead of the government's 2030 ban on the purchase of new petrol and diesel cars. The current framework expires in 2022, and we are now tendering for a new four-year contract. The framework aims to enable and encourage the use of electric vehicles by public sector organisations and to help increase driver confidence by reducing range anxiety. It's also a welcome boost to the green economy. Currently, there are 600 electric vehicle charging points across the county, 200 of which were installed by the County Council. These can be found in supermarket car parks, places of work, and council-run car parks. On-street charging points are currently being trialled in Winchester and Eastleigh. Final numbers for this new contract will be determined at a later date. Speaking at the latest full council meeting, Deputy Council Leader Councillor Rob Humby expressed his desire to stay ahead of the curve. He said, "The national and regional provision shows Hampshire has a higher number of rapid charging points relative to its population. But the market is changing very quickly as new cars come through with longer ranges and faster charging options. We want to ensure any investment will be fit for the future, and it cannot be solved by the public sector alone." And there's a picture there of a charging lead plugged into a white car.
Pub worker recognised for helping vulnerable woman. Winchester Street pastors have recognised the good work of a pub worker. In the early hours of Sunday, November the 21st, Craig Friswell, the manager of Alfie's on the Broadway, spent a long time supporting a vulnerable young woman until she was well enough for a taxi to take her home. Seeing Craig's care and compassion, the street pastor team returned on Friday evening to present Craig with a certificate of commendation and thanked him for his kind actions. And there's a delightful photograph. Craig is in the middle, very proudly holding his commendation certificate, flanked on either side by two of the street pastors wearing their uniform caps and jackets.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye. And I hope you enjoy the week ahead.